And once again, we're getting going for another edition of Week in Review. Hi, it's Kevin Stewart in for Jim Glover, enjoying some vacation time, but of course the news and things that are going on in the community never take a vacation. There's always something to talk about, and once more we'll be covering what's happening in this area. Starting with Coburg, once more we got John Hill with us, and I guess we're all powered up and ready to go on this particular topic, right?
We are, because, and we're talking about power today, because the story that came out that sprung the invitation to our guest today to come was one that really wasn't given a lot of airplay in the local area. And the news story is that the Coburg Taxpayers Association has been granted intervener status to oppose a rate hike proposed by the utility company in Coburg. And interventions are things that are usually done by organizations like Energy Probe and so forth. But for a local organization to get in, I think it's rather noteworthy. Yeah. So one of the authors of the intervention is with us today, and that's Brian Lambert. Welcome to Week in Review, Brian.
Hi, John. Good to be back. And hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Yes. Well, this is a rather unique situation here.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's a story behind it.
Yeah. I guess we should start with perhaps a bit of history, if you wouldn't mind, as to what exactly the CTA is trying to do, what the intervention process is, why these hearings, the rate thing, and so on, and who exactly are the players involved.
Yeah, because when we get involved in water and electricity in Coburg, we get dumped on with a number of names. There's Holco, there's Louie, Lakefront Utilities, there's Lucy, which is Lakefront Utility Services, and then there seems to be some other subsidiary corporations as well. So maybe you could just, when you're giving us this history, just explain where all of these organizations fit into that.
Okay, back prior to 2000, okay, all of these utility services were part of the town of Coburg. Okay, so it was just part of the town stuff. Okay, and the utilities ran and they earned enough money to do their capital replacements and capital additions and so on and so forth. But there was, as far as we can tell, no profit motive and so on involved. Okay, they basically covered their costs and covered capital replacement and new capital stuff. In 2000, the Harris government wanted to deregulate the electrical utility industry, and so it created legislation. And as a result of that, some corporate structures were introduced into that mix, okay? And you now had utility companies. You had Louie, the Lakefront Utilities, Inc., which actually holds the asset. It owns the poles and the transformers and all of that business. The waterworks, strangely, stayed with the town, okay? Lucy, which is Lakefront Utilities Services, Inc., was created, and it owns the people. It provides the services. And Louie outsources all of its work to Lucy, and the town outsources its waterworks labor and management and so on also to Lucy. Okay? Holdco was created, which is really the Town of Coburg Holdings, Inc., okay, to be a holding company which holds Lucy and Louie and also holds Coburg Networks, Inc., and then there were some other companies involved, like Lakefront Generation, and there was a lighting company and a water heater company and a number of other ventures that came and went, okay? Some towns, like Port Hope, sold their utility operation to a third party, okay? So that's where Verizon came in. Others, like Markham and Barrie and Vaughan, jointly own their utility company. So there's a variety of different variations ranging from wholly owned municipal like Coburg's is to third party, which is what happened with Port Hope, to a blend thing which Mississauga and Markham and so on do. Okay? So you now had that corporate structure, and over a period of time, information access started to vanish. Top wage earners and stuff were no longer published in the Sunshine List, and you know, and the claim was, well, we're a private company, we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's a little bit hokey because there's nothing in the Corporations Act that says that.
No, but they're using a technicality essentially.
No,
their definition is we're private, so we don't have to.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They are, in fact, private companies, okay? It then becomes management purview as to what they want to disclose or what they want to put forth and so on, okay? So their annual general meetings are not public. Their minutes, board minutes, are not public. Their financial statements are not public. They're given to the shareholder, who happens to be the town of Coburg, and yet getting access to them by the average Joe is pretty tough.
Well, okay. I understand at the last annual general meeting of Holco, the town councilors were invited, and I put in an access to information to ask what material was provided to the councilors. And what came back was, well, we don't have to tell you that because all that information was given to the councillors privately. You'll have to go to Holdco. And so I did. And Holdco sends me back a series of brochures that were handed out at the meeting, but it didn't include a lot of the subsidiary corporations, and so financial statements were really hard to follow. So what would appear to have happened is that the councillors were provided with a good news report, and they don't really have the understanding to ask pertinent questions. So I guess that the opportunity to ask those questions comes up whenever the utility company puts into the Ontario Energy Board for a rate increase. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that's basically the one opportunity that's available so far. And in the past, there have been, the Ontario Energy Board goes through the applications with a fine-tooth comb, and they ask questions line by line and so on and so forth. But they tend to ask technical type questions, and why does this schedule not reconcile with that schedule kind of questions. They don't ask kind of global questions about the board or about disclosure, about public benefit and so on. And this is perhaps the view that the CTA wanted to get across, was a more like a higher level stuff and avoid all of the technical garbage.
Okay. Well, getting more information that the public would need to know.
Yeah, and so that's why the CETA took the opportunity and to kind of peel back the onion a bit. Okay, and this is a growing trend. Like for instance, in Windsor, the public utility there was forced to open its meetings and provide financial disclosure and a bunch of other things due to public pressure. And I've heard rumors that there's provincial legislation in the offing that will basically force the utility companies to do that. And I'm not sure what the timing is or how that works.
Well, Holdco and then the subsidiary corporations that Lucy and Louie, they are run by appointed member or appointed directors, I take it, have to have certain qualifications. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's one of the things, is that there's a three-member board for each of those companies. Mayor Brockeneer is on the board of two of them, I believe. He's the chair of Holdco, and he's also, I believe, the chair of Louis. And there is a paid management employees and so on. So there's a president who is Derek Paul, and there are engineering staff and line staff and accounting staff and so on and so forth. So the things that you would normally expect in a corporation, okay? And they run the day-to-day business. The three-member board, the management report to them on some kind of periodic basis, and I guess the way it's supposed to work is that the mayor, as the town's representative, the major shareholder's representative, would come back and make reports and so on. If you go through the town council meeting minutes and so on, I've never seen any mention of this.
I have seen instances where there had become a vacancy on one of the boards, and the mayor calls for an appointment to the board. So, again, the public doesn't really get notice that these are open, or there's no ads in the paper saying if you'd like to apply to be a member of the board. Are there any criteria that one has to have in order to sit on the board?
Yeah, and that's one of the CTA's questions. Is in there's a in the documentation provided by Louis, there's a Holdco annual report, 2015, and in there it outlines some of the requirements. You know, talks about the board and the board members and some of the requirements. And in going through it, when one compares those requirements and the board's bio, board members' bios, they don't match up. And so the question sort of was, please explain the discrepancies here, and when does Louis intend to appoint board members that actually meet its criteria? And the same for Louis, and the same for Holdco.
These people get paid, don't they?
They get paid.
And this Louis and Lucy get paid, of course, because we get the bills.
Yeah. When you say they get paid, Louis and Lucy get paid in...
Well, when we get our hydro bills, our water bills, we pay those, and that goes into the revenues that these organizations make.
Yeah. Louis, as I mentioned, is an asset holding company, and it holds the license for distribution of electrical power. Okay, Louis buys the electrical power from Hydro One, and it basically passes it through dollar for dollar. It doesn't make any money on the energy charge. Where it makes its money is on distribution or the services and so on. And a small residential user, their bill might be 50-50 between energy charge and distribution services. For a large industrial concern, it would be somewhat less. Okay, so there's a lot of variation there. So the actual money that we're talking about for Louis in terms of service revenue, distribution revenue, is about $4.4 million. Okay, and that has to pay for wages and so on for 16 or so people, and it has to pay for their facilities and so on. It has to pay for capital improvements when, if they need a new telephone pole or a new transformer, etc. Okay, and that's all fair game. And, the employees of Lucy are unionized, so there's a union contract in place, and that has to be honored. So, it's the normal stuff you would expect from a corporation. The other interveners, for example, Energy Probe and VECC, which is a poverty monitoring group, okay, who are interested in seeing that utility rates don't become excessive and out of the reach of the average Joe. They have been interveners in the past on Louis' applications and so on, and this is the first time the CTA has done it, and it was really done to take the opportunity to try and get a better understanding of Louis's operations, Holdco's operations, and so on, and just try to discover what was going on and come to an understanding of some of the mishaps that have occurred over the years.
Well, we're talking about those mishaps here on Week in Review. We've talked a couple of about a couple of them, one being an overcharge to one of the factories in town, Horizon Plastic.
Yeah.
There's been a time when they forgot to pay their hydro bill, and we're doubling up on our energy costs right now because the Ontario Energy Board said that underpayment has to be paid this year. And then we've also talked about the lighting fiasco.
Yeah.
in the town of Cobourg. We're not talking small potatoes here, are we?
No, the thing with Horizon Plastics, for example, resulted in a payback to Horizon over several years of something in the order of $1.4 million. The other one you mentioned where they underpaid for their hydro was in the order of $750,000. The lighting lawsuit was $1 million or so, plus a whole pile of inventory that they can't sell. So there's a loss on the inventory as well.
So we got a lot of lighting here in town.
Yeah.
that we can't make use of. What happens to that?
Yeah, who knows? That's one of the questions, is where is it? And if it's been disposed of, what was the loss and how is that accounted for? And one of the constant themes with Louis is that whenever there are any of these losses, it gets charged back to the customer base instead of being borne by the company itself, because that would reduce the dividends to the shareholder. Okay.
And the shareholder is the town of Cobourg. So
right.
Whenever a big infrastructure proposition comes up, such as the purchase of the Park Theater or something like this, the town looks to Holdco to provide the money. But really, that is basically a tax because the taxpayers have paid for it.
Sure. It's really a matter of left pocket, right pocket. You know, which pocket do you want to pay from? And, you know, it's always your pocket.
And it's instead of bearing the cost of the mistakes that are made, they just take it to the board and increase the rates.
Yeah, they just pass it on. So we wanted to look at things of that nature. We wanted to look at, for example, when Louis was set up, part of the setup was a $7 million demand note, okay, which was in consideration for the assets that were transferred from the town to Louis, okay, the poles and the hydro.
So Louis gave Cobourg a note for $7.5 million?
Yeah, for $7 million, and like the town basically got an investment in Holdco or in Louis, whichever way you want to look at it, for about $7 million, and they got a note receivable for $7 million. That note bears interest at 7.25%, okay, which is considerably above the going rates now.
Which is what 3% for a corporation?
Yeah, current corporate rates would be somewhere in the 3 to 4%. The town of Cobourg borrows at somewhere in the 1.5 to 2% range. Okay, so it's really an excessive rate, and there doesn't appear to be any inclination by Louis or the town to change that rate, you know, to something more realistic. So that was a question that the CTA asked. And we weren't the only ones. Energy Probe also asked that question.
Because it would sound like Cobourg's getting a good deal. We're getting 7.5% when we could have been getting 3. But as you say, it really charged back to utility. People who pay for their utilities end up paying this excessive rate. So
yeah, like if you the interest amounts to somewhere around $600,000 a year. And so if you were to have the rate from seven and a quarter down to, say, 3.5, okay, you would reduce the interest expense by, say, $300,000. That $300,000 could then be used to reduce the electrical rates. Okay? That's one use. I'm sure the management of Louis would argue differently, and they are.
So it's that's one of the questions. Is there other questions that the CTA is putting to these companies?
Yeah, we've talked about the note, the $7 million loan or loan note. There's also a dividend from Holdco, which arises from Louis, okay, which the town gets, which in the past has been in the order of $500,000. And strangely, this year, or 2015, was reduced to $340,000. So one of the questions is, why the reduction? Okay, how did that arise? Other questions come about, like board meetings, which we just talked about. You know, they're not public. Will they be made public? What public access do we have, et cetera, et cetera? The annual reports that Louis or Holdco puts out. Louis doesn't put out anything, neither does Lucy. Okay, it's all Holdco. And as you mentioned, John, they're rather good news, fluffy kind of pieces. They don't really contain any substantive information.
They're putting out what they want people to see.
Oh, sure.
Exactly.
Exactly, yeah. So one of the questions involves that. You know, when are you going to put out something worthwhile? When are you going to publish financial statements and headcount kind of information
extra
and so on?
Increases that have been passed on to the consumer have not exactly been made public.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, these various mishaps that have gone on, like the water heater business or the lighting business or the thing with Horizon Plastics and so on, people seem to learn about them sort of by accident, I guess, slips of the tongue, someone hears something, it's rumors and so on. There's never any sort of
proper process for this.
Yeah, there's no public disclosure of it. Other things that have come up.
Maybe I'd just like to ask you, what's the process? You put in a an objection, I guess.
Yeah,
at this point in time, how does this work out?
Okay, the initial process was that we found out, the CTA found out that there was a rate increase and an application by Lakefront to the OEB, and the OEB calls, you know, makes public notice of this and asks for, you know, if people want to intervene, then they have to make application to do so. So the CTA did and was granted intervener status. Once you get that, you're given access to all of the information that Lakefront has generated in support of its application. Okay, and it's all on the OEB's website. It's public. You just have to know where to look for it. And it amounts to some 2,000-odd pages. So a group of us, four of us, waded through all of that stuff and came up with about 30 questions, which we submitted in writing to the OEB and to Lakefront. And in due course, Lakefront has to respond in writing. And if we don't like the answers, it would then progress to a telephone conference call to try and resolve the differences. And if that doesn't work, then there's a face-to-face meeting where a suitable settlement is negotiated.
Okay. Well, thank you for bringing us up to date on that. But there's another incident that I would like to just briefly touch upon, because your name came up before the council meeting on Monday night, and that is because the good news was that the skateboard park in Coburg has been reopened, and that a company has come in and constructed the or reconstructed the premises and making repairs at, I'm not just sure what the price was. And then you, I take it in your personal capacity, contacted Councillor Darling and said whatever the company did, it didn't do a very good job of it. Is that basically it?
Yeah, really quickly, that's about it. At a previous council meeting, council authorized, the skateboard park was closed for, quote, safety reasons back in April of this year. And after due study and so on, it was determined that an assortment of repairs were needed, and it was put out to tender. And a local company won the tender in the, it was $30,000 to $50,000, unspecified, okay, to do a variety of things. And so they proceeded to do some of those things. The work was scaled back, for a variety of reasons. For instance, one of the things they were said they would do in the $30,000 to $50,000 was paint the thing. Well, painting is useless. In 2 weeks, the graffiti will cover it again. It's part of the culture. Okay. There were other issues with broken concrete and so on, and there were apparently some panels, side panels that needed repair, that there was rust perforation and so on. So that's okay. So the work was done. And in doing so, they moved some of the units around and so on, and they did not parge the concrete, so the broken concrete areas were not repaired. New metal was installed around the bases of two of the units, and that was needed to cover up the perforated metal and so on. The major issue that I had was that there was a side panel on one unit, and the corner of one of the panels was bent out about half, three-quarters of an inch. And it was just like an arrow point. And if you walked by and happened to fall against that, or somebody pushed you, or you fell off the ramp, you could get severely cut by that chunk of metal sticking out. So on Wednesday, July 11, I sent an email to Brian Darling outlining this with pictures, and heard nothing. Saturday, I was going to send him another one, and I got an email back saying, sorry for the delay, it's been very busy, blah, blah, blah. Have referred this to Dean Hustwick, who's the director of parks, to get this looked after. Later on Saturday, an email from Hustwick saying, this must have occurred after the final inspection, and but in any case, it'll be looked after. Okay? Now, I have my doubts about occurring after the final inspection. This side panel is 1/8 plate steel. When I saw it, I tried pushing it in, and I couldn't move it an inch. I couldn't move it at all. It would have to be hammered into place.
So would I be correct in saying that the town paid out a lot of money to have repairs done, and basically we got taken to the cleaners by the repair company?
Well, we don't know what the final bill is. My estimates, you know, based on the work that I saw done, would not be in the $30,000 to $50,000 range. It'd be somewhat less. So anyway, the long and the short is, over the weekend, no repairs. Got to Monday afternoon, no repairs. So I posted my email to Darling on Draper's website and tried to post the pictures, but couldn't. I sent the pictures to John Draper, and he was at the council meeting, and apparently, I guess, he and Darling, Councillor Darling, had a discussion, and that's where the foofrah occurred.
And on Tuesday it was fixed.
And on Tuesday it was fixed.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Brian, for coming in today. It's been very instructive on this Lucy thing. And I wanted to thank you for looking into the skateboard park issue as well.
It sounds like we got some action going on there anyway, and it's been very interesting learning a little bit about the whole corporate structure, the way that's all come together, and hopefully makes a few people perhaps think and maybe look into it a little more themselves about what's going on with that. So thanks once again, Brian Lambert, and of course John Hill for being with us, and stay tuned. Of course, we still have lots more of Week in Review. I'm Kevin Stewart in for Jim Glover on Northumberland 89.7, and we'll be taking a look from the Port Hope scene with Brian Coggins in just a moment. Stand by.